Our parsha is Toledot, and our parsha introduces us to Yitzhak and Rivka as parents. They have the famous twins Yaakov and Esav. A world of a difference between them. Already in utero, they're fighting, and Rivka has a miserable pregnancy. She goes to ask the rabbi, "What's going on here? It doesn't seem normal." And Shem, who is a prophet, tells her it's because you have two giants in your stomach, and they're constantly going to be at odds with one another. Ultimately, the older one will be subservient to the younger one. In fact, that pasuk is worded in an interesting way. It says, "V'rav ya'avod tzair." The older will work the younger. Who will work for whom? So different interpretations. Either the older will work the younger will work for the older, or the older will work, in other words, for the younger. The question is, where do you put the comma? Is it the older will work, or the older will work the younger? So the first one's born, he's all red, he's born with a beard, hair on his back, on his chest. They look at this baby covered with hair. They say, "Wow, Esav, he's like ready-made man."
Steroids.
Yeah, okay. So then the younger one comes out, holding on to the heel. Interesting types of twins. He's holding on to his heel. And he's smooth, and they name him Yaakov, which means he will ultimately, Yaakov, he will ultimately, he'll get there. So they grow up, and Esav's a hunter, and Yaakov is a shepherd, and Yitzchak loves Esav. Esav's always conning him, telling him he's learning all day, when in fact he's out hunting and killing and raping and stealing. And Rivka knows what's going on. She loves Yaakov. And the day comes when Grandpa Avram dies. Yaakov's cooking. Esav's had his first kill. He's murdered Nimrod. And Esav comes in huffing and puffing. He's scared. He's running away from Nimrod's men. And that was his first evil day out. He raped, he murdered, everything on that day.
Why did he murder Nimrod?
What is the reason? We'll get there. We'll get there. In the review, we'll get there.
Is that blatant? What kind of a relationship did Rivka have with Yitzhak, where Isaac, where she wouldn't tell him? I mean, if it was that blatant, where he was such a criminal, and he was Yitzhak, this is a spiritual giant. He feels ruled by his stomach. The idea that he feeds him some medicine, so he must have known he was good in the field, right? And wouldn't you think that she would have some influence, saying that this kid is definitely,
Let's see. It's a good question. So Esav comes charging into Yaakov's tent. Yaakov's his rabbi. He always asks him his questions. Yaakov counseled him on how to win Nimrod. And Esav says, "I see that red stuff cooking. Pour it down my throat. I'm wiped. I just did so many things." And Yaakov says, "I want the rights to the firstborn." And Esav says, "I'm going to die. I'm telling you, man, what do I need it for? You take it. You think I'm going to outlive Dad? Not the way life's going now." So Yaakov says, "Okay, you promise me." And he promises, and they make a sale, and he gives them to eat. And Esav walks out and laughs and says, I got the better end of the deal. I got something for nothing. I would have never gotten that anyways. There's a famine, and Yitzchak goes down to Philistine territory, and he thinks he's going to go down to Egypt. God tells him, no, you stick around here. And Yitzchak also says that Rebekah is his sister. He's scared he's going to be killed. And Avimelech peeks into the window, and he sees Yitzchak joking around with his wife, Rivka. Look at that. Holy people joke around with their wives. Did you know that? Yep. Talmud tells us that. Rav. Talmud says, Rav never said a word in vain. Very serious person, Rav. Never. Never catch him saying a word that was just, shooting the breeze. And one of his students wanted to see, to learn from the Rebbe, how's one supposed to behave in the bedroom? So when no one was looking, he stole into the house, hid under the bed, and he's listening. and suddenly hears Rav and his wife come into the bedroom, and Rav starts joking around with her and frolicking and teasing, and he's like a teenager. And the student was so shocked that at some point he says, "Rabbi, what's going on here?" So Rav says, "Get out! What a chutzpah! What are you doing here?" Right? So, what's it teaching us? That's not called a word and thing. Meaning it's not a contradiction to holiness. Even a giant like Yitzchak, when it came time to be with his wife, so a person doesn't do, you know, there are all these myths around about a sheet with a hole in it and all kinds of things. No, Chazal wanted that there should be warmth between a couple, and that where intimacy is something that takes time, and they joke around beforehand, and there's a certain lightheadedness that comes along with it that belongs there. And the Talmud says it openly in numerous places. And that's part of what goes on. Back to our parasha. So Avimelech calls in Yitzchak and says, "Hey, she's your wife. Why do you tell me she's your sister?" So Yitzchak says, "I was scared I'd get killed over her." So Avimelech says, "You know what could have happened here?" Avimelech puts out an edict. No one's allowed to touch him or his wife. And even though it was a bad year and there was a drought, Yitzchak is tremendously successful. And at some point, Avimelech tells Yitzchak, "Get out of here. You're threatening our economy with all your wealth." So Yitzchak leaves, and everywhere he goes and digs wells of water. So the shepherds come and say, "That's a threat to us. If there's water here, then the enemies could come and attack us. They'll have ample supply of water." They're always finding excuses to remove him from his wells. Every time they claim it's their water. Until finally, they reach Rehovot, where they name the place Rehovot, because Rehovot means breath. Things have calmed down. Okay, God appears to him and tells him he's going to bless him. And Avimelech comes and makes a pact with him. And after the pact, Yitzchak sees he's getting old. So he calls in Esav and he says, "Look, I say I'm going to die. Go get me some good food. And after I eat, I will bless you." Rivka hears this. So she calls in Yaakov and says, "Here's what I heard. It's not right. You got to go in." And Yaakov says, "Nah, and lie to Dad. He'll curse me." Rivka says, "Listen, it's on me. You go." And she prepares the food she knows his father likes. And she puts goat's hair on him. And she gives him the food, and he comes in. And his father can't see a well anymore, and it's a dark room. And he comes in and says, "Dad?" And his father says, "I'm here. Who are you, son?" So he says, "I'm Esav, your firstborn. I did what you told me. Please sit down and eat from what I've hunted on your behalf, so that you will bless me." And he says, "That was fast." So Yaakov says, "Yeah, God help me." So Yitzchak says, "Let me feel you, son. Is that you, Esav, or not?" So he walks over to his father. Not such an easy thing. And he says, "You know, you really sound like Yaakov, but I feel all the hair coming out from under your sleeve. It certainly feels like you're Esav." And he blesses him. He says, "Is it you, son Esav?" And he says, "It's I." So he says, "Okay, let me eat from what you've hunted, so I'll bless you." So he brings him, and he eats, and he drinks. And he says, "Come, give me a kiss." So he kisses him. And he keeps trying to sense, is it him or not? And he smells his clothing and he says, "Boy, you smell like the Garden of Eden. God should give you from the dew above and the fats below, and all of prosperity, and the nations should bow to you. You should be master over your brother. Your mother's son should all bow to you. Whoever curses you should be cursed. Whoever blesses you should be blessed." Covers all the blessings from above, from below. The brothers should be subservient. Wow, if Esav would have gotten that. So, Yaakov is walking out of the room when he hears Esav's footsteps. So Yitzchak, because his eyesight was poor, was sitting in a very dark room. It hurt his eyes to have light. So Yaakov stands back against the wall. And Esav, who's coming in from the light, charges in, and he doesn't see Yaakov. And Yaakov standing in the dark. He sees Esav. Esav doesn't see Yaakov. Esav charges in, and Yaakov slips out without Esav's noticing. Esav says, get up, Dad. Eat from what I've prepared you so that you'll bless me. Yitzchak says, who are you? He says, I'm your son, your firstborn son, Esav. Yitzchak gets scared. And he says, you know, your brother conned me, and I gave him the blessings. And Esav says, you know, this is the second time he took my rights to the firstborn. Now he took this. Didn't you save anything for me? And Yitzchak says, what can I do? I made him master. I gave him all the blessings. What can I do for you? So Esav says, you only have one blessing. Bless me too. And he starts crying. And Yitzchak finally gives him a blessing that he will have abundance and he will live on the sword. And that when Yaakov sins, he will overtake him. And Esav wants to kill Yaakov. So Rivka tells Yitzchak, you know, I can't stand these wives around here. I don't want Yaakov to marry one of these girls. Send them off to my brother. Maybe I'll find a good wife there. So Rivka is concerned that Yaakov will get killed. And really, Esav was considering killing his father and killing Yaakov. So he sends him off. And what? To Rivka's brother, right. He blesses him and sends him off. And that's the end of our parsha, more or less. Let's go through it with more depth. So our parsha begins. Right. If we have a chance, we'll talk about it. You guys want chassidut? I don't know if we'll have time. The parsha begins with reiterating that Avram gave birth to Yitzchak. Our sages say that people were joking. They were saying, all those years they didn't have kids. You really think they have kids? Must be they picked up a baby off the street and they'd say it's his kid. So God made it that Yitzchak looked just like Avram. And whoever saw Yitzchak would say, boy, that's Avram's son. As a matter of fact, they looked identical. Yitzchak would walk into the room, people would stand up. They'd think it was Avram. So Avram said, God, you know, after all these years, I'm over 100 years old. I want to change. It would be much better in the world if people would look different as they got old. They'd have some warning that they're going to die. So God says, great idea, I'm starting from you. And that's why the first person that the Tanakh mentions got old was Avram. He was the first person to have white hairs. It was something he asked for and his wish was granted. So initially Avram and Yitzchak looked identical. And then Avram asked for this and then Avram started having white hairs. Yitzchak's 40 years old when he marries Rebekah. One opinion says she was 3. Another opinion says 12, 14, 15. And they're praying. And his prayers are answered. Here we see the idea of Yichus. Even though she was a tremendous tzaddikess, the fact that someone is a tzaddik, the son of a tzaddik, carries a certain weight in their prayers. So even though we'd like to say, you know, people are giants, Rabbi Akiva is a giant, the whole oral law is thanks to him, that's true. But at the end of the day, he doesn't have that merit. There is a merit. At the end of the day, you come with the cards stacked behind you. It's not only your cards being presented. But don't worry about it, because the flip side of it is, there was once two kids talking. And one said, you know who my grandfather is? And you know who my great-grandfather is? So the other kid said, yeah, you are the end of your line, so you can always look back. I'm the beginning of my line. All my kids will look back to me. So that's how you guys have to view it. You're not the end. As other people are the end of a line. You guys are the beginning of a line. Your children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren will all be able to say that they're your children and have to start somewhere. Avram had a father named Terach. The old Jewish people started with Avram. So you guys don't have that. But look, you have everything else, and your children will have it. They'll have it off of you.
You mentioned last class, Moshe Rabbeinu even had a grandson or a great-grandson. So it always go in flux.
Okay.
It wasn't so great, right?
But there Chazal say the opposite. Chazal say that the reason was because Moshe married the daughter of a priest. Chazal actually see it the other way there. Yeah.
It's good only when it's hot.
I'm just saying, no, you shouldn't let this take the wind out of your sails. At the end of the day, the giants of Jewish history. Where did King David come from? From Ruth the Moabite. Where did all the Jewish people come? From Avraham Avinu. At the end of the day, giants began as giants. Rabbi Akiva, the whole oral law is based on Rabbi Akiva. All the Mishnayos and everything starts with Rabbi Akiva. And he was the beginning of his line. Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir was the Unculus, right? We read Unculus. So I'm saying, you know, This is an important point. You're looking for a shidduch. They're offering you two girls. One of them comes from a family with a good lineage. The other one is like regular. So you might as well try the one with the good lineage. Just be careful. She shouldn't have her nose in the clouds. That's not healthy either. Back to our parsha. So Yitzchak's prayers are answered. And Rivka becomes pregnant and the kids are going crazy inside her. Now that's not natural. You have twins. It's a tough pregnancy, right? Today we term every pregnancy of twins as a high-risk pregnancy. But so far, what do the kids have to fight for in utero? So Chazal say they're fighting about the world to come. But the Ran, we learned the Drashos Ran, and he says, this is teaching us something, that ingrained in their nature, and part of God's plan for the world, was that there'd be these two opposing forces. Yaakov and Esav are going to fight it out till the end of time. And Yaakov and Esav are very different than Yishmael and Yitzchak. Because Yishmael was from the other woman, not even the wife. He was the son of the maid. But Yaakov and Esav are twins. And you will see that there are many correlations between Yaakov and Esav. They are both called Ish. Esav is Ish Sadeh. Yaakov and Esav are both called Shemesh. They are both referred to as the sun. We will see that there are many correlations between the strengths of Esav and Yaakov. The kings that Esav establishes. Esav is granted Mount Seir till the time of the Messiah. There are many, many correlations between Esav and Yaakov, and our relationship is different. They're twins at the end of the day. He's also a son of Yitzchak. He's also a son of Avram. So he comes out all red. And Yitzchak is concerned. Maybe there's something wrong with him. So he doesn't circumcise him. He keeps him uncircumcised. He's worried. I had a person call me last week or the week before. They had a baby, and they want to do a circumcision. And when I started questioning the history of the baby, there was room to be concerned. I said, we're not doing a circumcision so fast. We're waiting. One of the things that you learn as a rabbi, as a moel, is where to be concerned and where to wait. And part of knowing about circumcision is also knowing when to say, wait, we're waiting. We're waiting to see that the baby's healthy and strong. And then you do the circumcision. So Yitzchak waits. And he waits too long. He waits a year, 2 years. He sees the kid stays red. So he's wondering, is there something wrong? Is he hemophiliac? Why is he red? And when he finally decides it's okay, we can circumcise him. I've seen him getting cuts and bruises, and he can handle a circumcision. Esav is old enough that Esav says, no, buddy, you ain't touching me with that knife. Don't come near me with a 10-foot pole. And Esav won't let them circumcise him. Now, this is also an interesting thing in Chinuch. So Yitzchak doesn't grab him, tie him down and say, I'm circumcising you. Now this is the very Yitzchak who had himself tied. He said, that time he's, so I don't flinch, right? But when it's his own son who says, you're not touching me with that knife, man. Yitzchak doesn't say, come here, Esav, I got a candy for you. Here, just put your hand through this noose. That's where the candy is, right? Droop, grab the knife. Yeah.
That seems a lot of character. Torah.
No, but that shows you on the contrary. You know, I my 11th grade Rebbe used to say that when we think of Avram Avinu, and I'll quote him, he said, we think of Santa Claus. Chubby guy with a beard and warmth. You think of Yitzchak Avinu, you think of a stern, strict, you know, an Abraham Lincoln, right? You're thinking of, he said, the key is to understand that Yitzchak was a Santa Claus too. His gvura was not reflected to anyone else. His gvura was his internal work, but to everyone else, he was the epitome of warmth. So Yitzchak realizes that he's not going to win by taking Esav, tying him up, and having a forced operation to circumcise him. It teaches us a lot. Wow. Okay.
Esav is going against the will of his father.
Right? On this, Esav didn't give in.
Looks like a lot of Western children.
Because he was red. That's what the Medrash says. Yitzchak was concerned.
So what happened? Eventually,
he never got circumcised. Esav stayed uncircumcised. So Esav is a hunter. And he knows how to con his father. Now, the nature of man is that every person has a tendency to be softer to the firstborn. A firstborn son has a way to the father's heart that no one else does. So much so, there's a halacha that if you marry off your firstborn son in a house, the halacha assumes that in the thrill of the moment, you meant to give him the house. You married him off in the house, then the halachic assumption is, it's quoted in Shulchan Aruch too, the halachic assumption is you meant to give him the house because people get so excited over their first son. There's a special relationship between a father and a firstborn son. It's there. I don't know. I'm not a firstborn son. I have a firstborn son, but I'm not a firstborn son. So I don't know. I don't know how that plays itself out. But that's what Chazal say. So Yitzchak has a soft spot for Esav. It comes naturally. And Esav knows exactly how Yitzchak ticks. He asks him all the right questions. Dad, you know, I was wondering. He comes home with all these fantastic questions like he's really, really careful in halacha. When in fact, he's out bumming out. He just listens enough to make a good impression. So Esav is all about impression. He's all about impression. And this teaches us something about education. Very often where we let kids take us blind. A kid should feel you trust him. But at the same time, you should also double check. Make sure that things are what the kid wants you to think they are. That's part of our job as parents. Kids will be able to pull the wool over the parents' eyes part of the time. But parents have to be sharp enough that they can't do it all the time. And you have to know who your kid is. And Yitzchak did not.
In the English it says Yitzchak loved Esav because he could eat of his venison. It sounds so, you know, I mean, it must be more than that.
So our tradition is that Tzayid Befiv, Tzayid means hunting. So he was able to hunt out Yitzchak with his mouth. He knew how to, Tzayid Befiv, he knew how to hunt him out with his mouth. So again, and others say that Yitzchak grew up pampered, and then Yitzchak had the trauma of the Akedah, and Yitzchak initially did not succeed at all in business, and he lost all his father's wealth. And then Esav was the one who was able to bring him good food. He couldn't afford it on his own.
He had some qualities that he could admire, but given, you know, this is Yitzchak, he's not going to, you know, you think someone, Ruach HaKodesh, a giant, is going to be so blind to someone, and that Rivka had no, she grew up in the house of leprosy.
Slowly, slowly, slowly. We're going to see. That's part of the idea here. You could be a giant in Torah.
And he portrayed as some nincompoop because he's so mad.
It's not a nincompoop. On the contrary. Right. When you have someone that's a giant in Torah, this happens often. They don't see. Look at Elisha has Gehazi, his servant, who kicks away all the students, or many of the students, who want to come learn by Elisha. And when a woman comes, he unabashedly grabs her on her chest. You know, and Elisha didn't figure out that this guy is not the finest character. He's still the servant in Elisha. He's the one that controls Elisha's chambers. Who's going to get in and who not?
He's a too good eye.
Okay? I'm saying, so sometimes you see giants, and this is something you see throughout Jewish history. You had giant people, and sometimes they didn't realize that the second in command wasn't anywhere near that. Like in Esav, yeah.
What's the difference between Abraham and Yishmael, and having Sarah know that Yishmael has to get sent out, or Yaakov and Joseph, and not knowing that the brothers all didn't, you know, had the jealousy or whatever towards Joseph? In other words,
who said Yaakov didn't know? We'll see that later, that Yaakov did know they were jealous. Yaakov knew they were jealous, and he suspected they bumped him off.
But in other words, like, it's a common theme, doesn't it?
Right. Years ago, I wrote a piece on this, how Tanakh really, from the whole book of Genesis, shows you brothers who don't get along. From Cain and Abel, to Noah's three sons, one's a slave to the other, to Yitzchak and Ishmael, Yaakov and Esav, Yaakov's children. Where does the tide change? In Egypt. Moshe and Aaron. Okay, it's a long thought. Okay, you're right. It's a point to be discussed.
Moshe and Aaron were very old when they had the real.
Okay. So.
On Tzedek HaKohen says that Yitzchak felt in Esav the neshamot of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi and all those Igirim that came from Rabbi Akiva. So, you know, in Esav was some kedusha in potential that will go out only in many, many other years. And that was the point.
Are many shitot. I think for the first time that guys are meeting the parsha, we should leave it here. So Yaakov knows that Grandpa Avram passed away, and Yitzchak is in mourning, so he prepares a special dish. Mourners eat the first meal with round foods. We remind them that death is a cycle in the world, and that sometimes the best thing is like a circle that's a complete unit to be silent, to keep their mouths shut, which isn't easy when someone's lost a close relative. And Esav comes charging in the day before Esav told Yaakov, I went hunting the other day. This old king comes riding up to me. He says, I'm Nimrod, and I'm the hunter here. And if you want to hunt in the forest on this planet, you pay taxes to me. And I said to him, listen here, I don't know who you are, and you're not going to tell me to pay taxes. And Nimrod said, if I see you here tomorrow, you're dead. And I said, we'll see you, buddy. And I left. Now what do I do? Yaakov, what do I do now? Yaakov said, I'll tell you, that Nimrod's famous. You know, he tried killing Grandpa Avram. He's been a troublemaker from the day he hit the planet. But, you know, his real strength stems from the cloak that he stole, the cloak that came out of the Garden of Eden. If you can get him to take it off, tell him, buddy, I'll take you on, but let's just take off our jackets first. If you can get him to take it off, then you could jump him and kill him, you could win the fight. But don't try to win him when he's still wearing it. So Esav goes out the next day, and as we said, he had a very eventful day filled with sin, and Nimrod goes out with his men to check if Esav is going to go hunting without paying taxes, and Esav is hiding and watching them, and finally Nimrod tells his men, you guys go that way, I'll go this way. And he goes that way on his horse, and when Esav sees that Nimrod's alone, he comes out into the clearing and says, hey, you're looking for me? Nimrod says, yeah. Esav says, come, I'll take you on. Nimrod comes off his horse. Esav says, just a second, let's just take off our jackets and we'll go. Nimrod goes to the side, starts taking off his jacket. Esav pounces him from behind and kills him. The same day that Avram dies, Nimrod dies. The same Nimrod that's been trying to kill Avram his whole life. God always maintains a balance in the world. There's a certain amount of good and a certain amount of bad. If there's more good, there's more bad. If there's less good, there's less bad. Avram died, Nimrod died. So long as Avram's around, Nimrod's around. There's always that balance. And who kills Nimrod? Avram's own grandson. Now Nimrod's scared. Esav's scared. He grabs the jacket, runs back to Yaakov, and he doesn't know if Nimrod's men are on his tail. He comes charging into the tent, says, hey man, I'm hungry, what you cooking? Yaakov sees his hands covered with blood. What's going on? Esav says, what do you mean? You gave me the advice. You told me how to do it. I killed him. It's finished. You killed a man today? Esav says, yeah, you're kidding. Oh, felt good. And Yaakov says, you killed a human being today? Esav says, yeah. Now give me to eat. Yaakov says, you know Grandpa Avram died? Esav says, and what's that to me? Yaakov says, it's your grandfather. Dad is sitting Shiva and I'm making this food for him. Esav says, yeah, and I'm hungry. Yaakov says, do you feel like you're part of this? You know, Avram had a way of life. Abba had a way of life. You just killed someone. Esav says, right, I'm not a part of this. I'm living a life of death. I'm living a life where I don't expect to live out my years. I don't believe I will die after death. What do I need the rights to the firstborn for? Yaakov says, you understand the rights to the firstborn means you're the continuation of Avram, Yitzchak, Esav. Esav says, right, and it's no great glory for me. When I kill a Nimrod, what do they say about me? They say, oh, his grandfather was a tzaddik. What does that help me? I'm a gangster. If my grandfather was Al Capone, that would be nice. If my grandfather is Avram Avinu, no. It doesn't do much for me. Yaakov says, look, if you don't feel like you're a part of this, you're not continuing the way of the family, so then sell me the rights to being the continuation. Esav says, buddy, no problem. Yaakov says, I'll pay for it. Esav says, give me the food. Yaakov says, you want the food I'm preparing for Abba, who's sitting Shiva after he lost his father. Esav says, yeah, you understood. Now I'll give you the rights to the firstborn. You give me the food. Yaakov says, okay, but promise me you won't turn back on it. Esav promises, signs a contract, says, now I'm going to open my mouth and you're going to pour. Slow and gentle, okay? Esav tilts his head back, opens his mouth, starts gulping the food down. He's finished eating. He gets up. Now, they were accustomed to making a blessing afterwards. Esav says, leave me alone. What God? If there were a God in the world, would Avram die? What do I need to be pious for? Look what happened today. Nimrod died. Avram died. Tell me, Yaakov, Avram was such a pious person. Did that give him a ticket away from death? No, he died the same way Nimrod died. Hinei anochi olech lamud. I'm going to die too. Does it matter if I lead a pious life or an impious life? Makes no difference. Look, everyone dies. Even Avram died today. So, I don't bench. It's tzaddik. But, I don't need any of this. It doesn't serve you anything. Think about it, Yaakov. So Yaakov says, fine, I'll buy the rights from you. And Esav denies there's a God, and denies there's a benching, and denies there's a fear of heaven, and denies there's a world to come, and gets up and walks out of the house and starts telling people, look at my brother the fool. He made the most delicious meal, and I got it for nothing, for giving him the rights to the firstborn, something which I had nothing to do with anyways. And Esav doesn't realize that people are talking, what kind of fool is Esav? For a bunch of red food, he gave up his rights to the firstborn, to the greatest family? So Esav mocks the rights, and the people mock Esav. And everyone knows about this except for Yitzchak. There's a famine. They go down to Gerar, and Yitzchak thinks he's got to go down to Egypt. Dad went down to Egypt, he should go down to Egypt. God says, no, but you're not your dad. One of the mistakes people make is they see their Rebbe, and they figure if he does it, I should do it. Sometimes people say, Rabbi, do you do such and such? What difference does it make if he does or doesn't do? You got to ask, should I do such and such? It's a different question. People sometimes say, Rabbi, do you eat this hechsher? Maybe he doesn't, but ask him, should I eat the hechsher? He'll tell you, maybe you should. The fact that he takes on 15 stringencies has nothing to do with you. You got to ask what's right for you. God tells Yitzchak, you don't go down to Egypt. That was right for Avram. It's not right for you. Stick around. So, again, the whole story of Yitzchak and Rivka. And Avimelech kicks Yitzchak out. The story of the wells is an allusion to the temples and other deep ideas. All kinds of secrets going on there. I don't know them. And we have the treaty between Yitzchak and Avimelech. And finally, Esav's 40 years old. He marries a woman. She's a pagan, but he wants her to look Jewish. So he changes her name to Yehudis. Yehudis. I don't know how that became a Jewish name, but at any rate, Yehudis. Esav wants everyone to think she's a monotheist. So Yehudi means monotheist. So he calls her Yehudis, even though she's a blatant pagan. And Yitzchak and Rebekah, they're old, so they move in with Esav, and Esav's wives are disrespectful, and they speak them back in their face, and they offer incense to their idols, and Yitzchak starts losing his eyesight, and he can't handle it. Rivka, she grew up with this. You know, sometimes a person who's chozer b'tshuva can deal with certain things that other people can't, because he's used to it. You know, people all around him are, he walks through a bar, and people are doing drugs and stuff, and he's not interested. And he walks in with a yeshiva guy who says, What's that? Wait a second. And he says, don't look at that. It's not good for you. Come on. Isn't it interesting? No, I know exactly what it is. It's not good for you. Let's move. Right? Okay, so Rivka, she's like, she's used to all this. And Yitzchak, it destroys him. So Yitzchak reaches his birthday. It's Pesach. It's 5 years from when the year his father passed, and he calls Esav and he says, I'm getting old, I can't know when I'm going to die. Go hunt for me some food, bring me kosher food. Be careful not to take from something that we don't know who the owner is. Make sure it's something that's obviously free. And after I eat it, I'll be satiated, I'll be calm, I will bless you. Rivka hears this. There's no time to go tell Yitzhak, you know, I had a prophecy once. She always assumed Yitzchak knew. Rivka hears this, and there's no time to go talking to Yitzchak and say, you know, maybe reconsider, maybe there's more going on here. All the years, Rivka doesn't dash Yitzchak's hopes. Some understand that Rivka thought Yitzchak knew, and in spite of it, he felt this was the way to bring up Esav. Some understand that Rivka held Yitzchak in such high regard, she thought for sure he had every prophecy and he knew what he was doing. She never, according to this understanding, she didn't think he was taken by all of it. He obviously felt that this was the way to try and bring Esav back. Others make a much more complicated philosophical argument between Yitzchak and Rivka about whether Yaakov is supposed to manage in this world without any benefits or and Esav gets this world, Yaakov only gets the world to come. Or and Rivka says, no, Yaakov has to manage in this world with this world. At any rate, whatever the calculation is, Rivka calls her son, who's 60 years old at this point. She says, Yaakov, I hear what's about to happen. This isn't good. Go bring me two sheep. I'm making your father the food he likes. He'll eat it. He'll bless you, because he doesn't know. If he's passing, obviously he has room to be concerned. And Yaakov says, he's hairy, I'm smooth. 60-year-old man. If my father touches me, he's going to think I'm a liar. He'll curse me. His mother says, it's on me. What does that mean? And anyways, if Yitzhak blesses and he thinks he's blessing Esav, what value is it? You know, if I tell you, dear Shmulik, I'm giving you $1 million. It's so good that you're here. And you say, thanks. You didn't get anything. The key here is that God came into the picture. And God wasn't missled. When Yitzhak makes a blessing, he's asking God to bless. V'yitin lecha ha'elokim, God should grant you. And he feels the Shekhinah present, and he realizes God is with him on the blessing. And that's why when Esav walks in, Yitzhak says, what's going on here? And in one moment, suddenly Yitzhak's whole life is turned around, because he suddenly understands, wait a second, God approved the blessing for Yaakov. So even though Yaakov tricked me, but God agreed with that. And God is not giving me the blessing for Esav. And that's what he says. I can't bless you. What do you mean you can't bless him? God's not here to bless you, Esav. I don't feel that aura that I can give you any blessing. This isn't right. And Esav says, you know what? He bought the rights to the firstborn. Now he took my blessing too. Yitzhak says, hey, wait a second. I told you I'm giving you the blessing as the firstborn. Yitzhak thinks to himself, you didn't tell me you lost your rights to the firstborn. So Yaakov got the blessing that technically Yitzchak meant to give whoever was the continuation of the family. Esav and Yaakov had made an agreement. Yaakov's the continuation. He gets the inheritance. Esav figured, I'm funding dad. There ain't going to be no inheritance. I'm bringing him all his food. Yaakov says it's about the family name. It's about continuing the legacy. It's about continuing monotheism. Esav says, I'm not into any of that. So Yitzchak gives the blessing, and Rebecca tricks him into doing what he ultimately thinks is right. And that's why ultimately when Yitzchak calls Yaakov back in, he reiterates the blessing at the end of the parasha. He tells him, man, you should have the land that God granted Avraham. You should have this land.
With this interpretation, they said, lucky God we got.
Right. And here we see a rule though. Esav doesn't give in. Yitzchak says, I can't. And Esav says, what do you mean? And Yitzchak says, I can't. And Esav says, but you must have something. And Yitzchak says, but what can I give you? And Esav starts trying. He says, you can't do that to me. So that's a rule in bargaining. Don't give in. I've had this many times, especially in Israel. You have to understand, you come to the counter and the woman behind the counter says, I can't. Look, I'll tell you a simple story from this week. We had a stroller. Stroller went bad. We call up the company. We say, you know, we haven't had the stroller for a year. So I know how to talk to Israelis already. I said, look, I spoke nice. I said, look, I'm very sorry. This is not the first stroller we bought. It's the fifth stroller we bought. We've never had a stroller that in under a year went bad. I think that this is the third time we have to bring it in for fixing. I think at this point, the right thing is that such a company like you will give us a different stroller instead. So the guy says, look, I don't know what your problem is with the strollers. I can't give you another stroller. So I said, I understand you can't, but let me talk to your manager. Maybe he can. So he says, I am the manager. I own the store and I can't give you another stroller. I said, fine. So can you give me the number of the company? I'll talk to them. And he says to me, yeah, you could talk to them. I don't think they'll do it, but you could talk to them. What they'll tell you is to bring it to me and they'll fix it. I said, that's nice, but it'll take 2 weeks. How am I supposed to manage with my kids for 2 weeks? See, I learned this over the years. You don't give in. They're going to make it your problem, and you have to answer, no, 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 no. I have a problem, so now it's our problem. You come to the checkout counter, and they say, I can't do this. And you say, okay, so what am I supposed to do now? See, as Americans, you guys think like, hey, she can't do it. I'm done. No, the answer is it's our problem. So help me. What am I supposed to do now? You come to Mishrad HaPnim, and they say, you know, you needed this form. You didn't bring it. So you say, well, what am I supposed to do now? And they say, no, 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 go back. And you say, no, I can't. You know, I took a day off of work. What do you suggest I do? Is it possible to call them? And they'll say, no, I can't call them. So you say, well, maybe we could talk to your supervisor. Maybe she could call them. Meaning you don't have to be nasty. You just have to be very friendly. It's our problem.
And allow a lot more time for shopping than you would in the States. Because you'll be waiting in line. And so what
but you can win. You can win.
Sure.
Because people, when they say no, what they mean is, I don't have an easy solution. And your job is to say, well let's figure out another solution. And Israelis, they lose, Americans that come to Israel lose time and again, and then they get worn down. You don't have to get upset. You don't have to stomp your fist. You just have to say what Esav said. You know, I'm not going to get a blessing. Right. Yeah, that's what your father just said. You're not going to get a blessing. No, it can't be. I'm not going to get right. You got to figure out a way of saying, so what do we do and how do we do and what do you suggest we should do? And let's find the solution. Hey, we're nice, but it's our problem. And they'll try to tell you it's your problem. And you'll say, yeah, but let's figure out a solution together. You don't give in. And 95% of the time, you get what you wanted. I don't know, but I could tell you, I've been doing this for a number of years and it works.
Yeah, but I try to understand why.
I don't know why. My mother has an interpretation, I don't know.
Because it is our problem. They're part of us.
Whatever, maybe after class I'll tell you what my mother told me. Back to our parsha. So we will see a few times in the Torah that people who keep saying, I don't want to be left out, they don't get left out. There's a rule in life. When you feel like, hey, I want a part of this, if you really want a part of it, just say it. Rivka comes to Yitzchak and says, send them off. I don't want a daughter-in-law like this. So Yaakov is being sent by Rivka and Yitzchak. And all the years that he's away, Esav does massive kibud av aim. Our sages say we have to learn from Esav what it means to do kibud av aim. Honoring his parents. Esav would go hunting. Time to bring his dad the food. He'd go take a shower, comb his hair, put on cologne, put on a new suit in honor of his dad. You know, I learned this from Esav. The Midrash says this. So when I fly to visit my parents, I bring a change of clothing in the suitcase. So when I get off the plane, I put on cologne, change the clothing. I go into a public bathroom, change all my clothing. So I come out fresh. You know, you come off a plane. You've been sitting sweating for 14 hours. Even if you took a shower before you boarded the plane, you're not coming out too fresh. Right? Okay. Now they don't let you take cologne. I buy one at the duty free. It's the only thing I buy at the duty free. But that's kibud av aim. The Chazal say, learn from Esav. We don't come close to Esav. Esav's big mitzvah is kibud av aim. He's thinking how to do it. People sometimes say, I can't call my parents every day. Why can't you call your parents every day? We always get into fights. Okay, send them an SMS. Send an email. Call when they're not home and leave a voicemail. There are ways to do it. You don't have to talk to them every day, but why not give them that good feeling? Hey, Dad, I miss you. Hope everything's great. Have a good day. I don't understand people who don't call at least every Friday or Thursday night, wish their parents a good Shabbos. You know, I call my parents every day. I call my grandparents. My wife's grandparents, before Shabbos, thank God we have grandparents, we call them, we wish them a good Shabbos. We're given these gifts, and kibud av aim is so important, and even Esav knows how to do it. And that's something we have to learn. Chazal say, for all the years that Yaakov was out there, and Esav was doing kibud av aim, Yaakov was taken to task later in life. And then, when Yaakov finally comes back, the reason he's scared of Esav is because he says, all these years, Esav has been doing kibud av aim, and I haven't. I've been away from home. I have a good excuse. I was looking for a shidduch, but at the end of the day, I haven't been doing my mitzvah. And that's the mitzvah that Esav has merits for years to come. The mitzvah of kibud av aim. Tov.
You didn't say that